I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
I know he's a basketball guy, but I don't even think of him as a basketball guy because he holds pretty much every record you could hold at Los Altos High School. Took his team to a 14-0 perfect record. This guy was a passing phenom. Mike Smith joins us now, Jazz pre, half, and post analyst, the best in the business, my good friend. Mike, why didn't you pursue football? What was it that made you head into the basketball world instead of keeping that rocket of an arm that you had going?
Hans, it's good to be with you. It's a very interesting question if we want to go back 37 years. But I don't know. I guess the quick answer is I didn't know how good I was at football because I'd seen my high school win before. The year we won it, my senior year, was the fifth time in 10 years we'd won it.
Oh, geez.
So part of me thought, okay, it's the program, it's the coaching. And part of that is true. Like, my coaches would go to the 49ers summer camp and their 7-on-7 stuff, and they would go to BYU. And they, you know, would rob their West Coast offense. And so you're robbing from Holmgren and Chow and Lavelle, and you're robbing from Bill Walsh. And you're bringing it down to the high school level. And we just, I don't know. Honestly, I coincided with some really athletic guys at the skilled positions and at a public high school. As I look back, Hans, I kind of wish I had tried because 6'9 in the NFL had really never been done before, and it would have been cool to be a pioneer, but I don't know. I just thought basketball was my calling.
I just love you. You're so good at football, good at basketball. You played some volleyball, too, if I remember talking to you about that. Didn't you play some volleyball?
Yeah, I was a little ahead of my time there, too. I was a 6'10 setter. So I was blessed with these soft hands, and I went to one of those high schools that had a boys program because not every high school in my league did. And then we would go travel down to the beach schools to play. So that was thanks to a man named Dana Braga. He was our algebra teacher at school, but he fell in love with volleyball. And he created the men's program, self-funded, and then we would travel to play our games. And every year, you know, 5 years before me and 5 years after me, we had a guy get a D1 scholarship for volleyball. Just, you know, these really good athletes who had never been introduced to the game. And because there was a program, they took to it. And I just was kind of tired of baseball. I played baseball up until 16, and I was like, I'm due for a change. And so I tried out for volleyball and immediately loved it. And little known fact, Hans, is that I was invited twice to the Olympic team in volleyball. That's 1988 and 1992. And the first time I chose not to go because I was trying out for the men's basketball team in the Olympics in 88. And then in 92, I was contractually obligated by the Celtics. I couldn't go participate. So.
Wow. I love it.
There you have it.
I love it, man. Everything I love. Love volleyball, love football, love basketball. You're good at all those things.
Good.
I wanted to because I know Danny Ainge, you guys didn't have a crossover. I think you were 4 years or so after Danny Ainge at BYU. But do you and Danny ever commiserate, go back and forth in regards to BYU basketball and where it currently stands? Do you have a lot of opinions on where they're at as they move into the Big 12, Mike?
It's a loaded question because I think most people would assume Danny and I are good friends, and most people would assume Danny and I either coincided in Boston or at BYU.
Yeah.
And only the former is true. We are best of friends, and that precedes any Jazz alignment today. That goes back 25 years. But the truth of the matter is we never coincided at BYU, so you're right. He's 6 years older. Matter of fact, Danny turns, he's got a birthday on Friday, so wish him well on the air. So he's 6 years ahead of me, so I don't catch him at BYU, although I admired him and looked up to him and never really met him or spent any time with him. And then he's done with Boston and actually traded the year before when I enter the Celtics. And so the year before, he's traded to Sacramento, and then I'm Boston's first pick the next year. So, like, we bump into each other in the NBA and, you know, kind of see each other, but he's more friendly with Bird and McHale than he is with me, because his only connection to me is, okay, you're the next BYU ball player that came along, but I don't really know you. And not that he was less than kind. He just had a greater connection when, you know, let's say the Celtics would play Sacramento, or the next year he went to Portland and the Celtics would play Portland. He had greater ties to other people. It's not until I'm broadcasting for the Clippers and he's actually broadcasting for TNT and living in Arizona that I call him up on a whim and said, hey, I'm in town. I got an off day. If you want to go tee it up? Hmm. And we do. And we become fast friends immediately. And I don't even know how to explain this, except that he and I connect in almost every facet of life, call it spiritual and religious, call it basketball IQ, call it golf IQ and history, anything sports related, and the highest level of, like, the game within the game.
Mm-hmm.
And so just Friday, you know, he and I met in Vegas and spent the day together, and he's down there watching college players and I had a day off, and that's all we talk about. That's honestly all we talk about, is where is the game today? Where is the game going? And then we'll talk about little tiny details of stuff, and whether it's, you know, Walker Kessler's mobility, or whether it's Ochai Agbaji's quickness, or whether it's Markkanen's rise to superstardom. It could be that. I guess on a lesser level, it is BYU hoops and their current state and their entrance into the Big 12. And I don't know. We connect on, like, it's really hard to describe, but we could spend 3 hours together and just go on church doctrine. And you'd think that's weird. Like most people say, really? That's all you talked about? And I'd be like, yeah, for some reason we got on that. We just went into the depths of that. But he's been very dear to me. I consider him an older brother, and, you know, I think it's serendipitous that we both end up somehow aligned with the Jazz at this point of our life.
Well, it's great to really have Danny Ainge running the operations and obviously get your analysis on air about a lot of the moves that Danny has to make. And, Mike, he's got a heavy load in front of him, a very heavy load in front of him, where he's got all these assets accumulated. I think that he is in one of the best positions that an NBA team could be in this league right now. And you've got a draft that is loaded with talent coming up. How much do you think, as the Jazz are finishing out this season, how much does the weight of that draft sit on Danny Ainge and sit on this Jazz organization?
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, it's a great question, and it's just, it's not a perfect world, right? Like it's a really difficult task. Yes, they've made all the moves to put themselves in this enviable position. So you're spot on. Not only have they done the unthinkable, and let's just say revolutionary, to trade not only your whole starting five from 2 years ago that had the best record in the West. Okay, that's unthinkable. But last year they run it back, and, you know, he gets involved, and I'm sure, I don't know this, I'm not relating what's been told to me, but I just, in my mind, I'm sure at some point Ryan has a conversation with Danny and says, okay, look at our squad. Can this team win a championship as presently constituted? The answer was no. And for a number of reasons, you know, whether it was Donovan and Rudy not getting involved, along, or, you know, you can't have two alphas like that, or whatever the reasons were, the answer was no. The answer was no to me, too, from my own perspective. And then they do the unthinkable. Well, that's hard enough. But then to go amass and accumulate the number of picks they've done, that's, I mean, just a sidebar to their astuteness and greatness and their savvy and their ability to negotiate and all that, to hold true to what you thought your players were worth, that's incredible. In the midst of all that, to have selectively chosen a couple of young studs, right? Like, you get the impression right now that Agbaji has a future.
Oh, yeah.
And I told you months ago, Kessler had a future.
Oh, yeah.
And Markkanen to rise to his stardom, those are all, just call them byproducts of, you know, a really astute move. Not only did they amass the picks, but they found some gems in the rough. And let's not leave out Talen Horton Tucker, which is not a, you know, initial trade. It's kind of an ancillary or subsidiary trade where they then take an asset they got, ship it to the Lakers, Patrick Beverley, to go get Talen Horton Tucker, and he's done nothing but impress in the last four games. And I'm not saying he's your point guard of the future. I don't know yet, and I think that's what we're all trying to figure out. But that's a long way of telling you, Hans, that with all that done, it's still not done, right? And
yeah,
that's what you're getting at. It's not a perfect, it's not a mathematical equation. It's not even quantifiable. You have to now make some astute moves, and whether it's drafting young guys that, and then selecting them, great. And then either moving those pieces or taking three of your picks and moving them for an asset that you know will be solid and will fit in for the next 7 years and be a piece to that title. I guess the best part about it is you do have those options. You have cap flexibility. You could take on contracts. You could trade picks for a player, right, because you can take on money because you relieved yourself of the Conley contract. And then, of course, you hope you get lucky, right? You hope you land a great pick. And it's just not easy. Like, think about it. All the picks Danny had in Boston, and, like, he got Marcus Smart right, and he got Jaylen Brown right, and he got Jason Tatum right. And that team almost won a title last year and should have, and could do it again this year. Like, they're that good. The Jazz will actually see him on Saturday night. So it's a loaded question. It's a heavy burden. But there's no question in my mind we have the right guys making those calls.
No question about that. You know, I don't think you can find a better one than Danny Ainge. That's one guy I'd love to have tasked that with that responsibility. And some of the genius of it, the creativity, some of the ingenuity of it in drafting a piece that you know another team might want to package with another piece. There's so many things that you can do with those assets, and I can't wait to see him kind of unfold and unravel those things. Before we let you go, I wanted to get your thoughts on Kelly Olynyk. 31 years old. He's got one more year on his deal at $12 million. We talk about the future. Markkanen, no question. Kessler, no question. Agbaji, no question. It's almost looking like Simone Vontecchio is becoming a no question. But what is the future of Kelly Olynyk with the Utah Jazz in your assessment?
Let me just give you a little history. In the history of the Utah Jazz, there's only two guys that have ever shot 50, 40, and 80. Okay, there's this one exclusive club called the 50, 40, 90 Club, and there's only like, you know, eight or nine members of that all time. right? That's Reggie Miller. That's Larry Bird. That's Steve Nash a handful of times. It's Mark Price. It's Kevin Durant. It's Steph did it once, right? Kyrie's done it once. You're talking about the greatest shooters can shoot 50, 40, 90. A guy named Jose Calderon did it one year because he only missed like three free throws the whole year. It was crazy. So let's take it down a notch and go 50 from the field, 40 from three, 80 from the line. Only Stockton and Hornacek have done that in Jazz history. Those are the only guys, and they both did it more than once. One guy did it like five times, one guy did it twice. But this year, Markkanen is doing it. Sexton is doing it. And Kelly Olynyk is hundredths of a percentage point from doing it. He shoots 498 from the field. He shoots 399 from three. If he ticks up in either of those categories, you're going to have one season where three Jazz players do it. I guess that's just my way of showing you that he has value, right? He's averaging 12 points a game, almost six rebounds, a career high 3.3 assists. He's a different player. I call him a UFO. And a Lemma will say to me, what the heck's a UFO? I said, because he's unfreaking orthodox. Like he's this seven-footer who's not really a seven-footer because he'll grab a rebound, he can initiate a break. He'll catch it from three. He can fake and pump fake. Go make a play. He's an imperfect player. We all are in the NBA, other than a Jordan. I mean, we all have our imperfectness about us. But there's value there, Hans. And so I guess, I don't know, contract kind of trumps everything, right? If you can keep a guy like that for a decent contract, then, you know, that's not a horrible thing. I'll mention guys to Danny all the time. What do you think about that guy? He goes, I love that guy, but I hate his contract. I said, okay.
Yeah.
I said, what about this guy? We need that guy. That guy can shoot. We need another floor spacer on the weak side. And he goes, I agree. That guy can shoot the lights out, but I hate his contract. And so it's all about what makes sense, right? Like if you can keep Kelly at a nice contract, then he's a valuable piece because he's different. You know, he's not a shot blocker, and he's not a great rebounder. But all of a sudden, if he's back for the next 2 years, you're pairing him with a 7'1" Walker Kessler with 20 more pounds, it becomes a dominant rebounder. Maybe you don't need him to rebound as much, and maybe you need a ball mover and a playmaker. But I don't know. I don't have all the answers to that stuff. And I do know that every championship team needs your studs, probably your alpha, your number two, and your number three. And then you need about five really good players. And those players could be better elsewhere, but on those championship teams, they almost take a lesser role and perform certain duties. And, you know, he could be that kind of guy.
Mike, I could keep you forever, man. We could easily do a four-hour show together. I'm not even kidding you. I've got a million questions.
You just need me on a barbecue meat.
I'll teach you how to barbecue.
You teach me
the art of basketball. Yeah, I appreciate it. Really appreciate it. Thanks for your insight, Mike. Thanks for your friendship, and we'll be talking to you again soon, I'm sure.
Hans, I can't believe you're flying solo today. That is a testament to your flexibility, your skill set, not only to be the analyst, but to be the host while Scotty G flies off to go do a Utah State game. You do an amazing job.
Yeah, we gotta keep Scotty where Scotty needs to be. He's got to be on a mic at an NCAA tournament game. That's a pretty fantastic one. Mike, thank you, brother.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, see you soon.
There you go, Mike Smith, the Utah Jazz pre, half, and post analyst.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.